Agriculture and Natural Resources to order. Good morning. Sorry I'm a little late. I was out doing my April Fool's jokes. I won't tell you what those were. Just kidding. We're going to open committee with a public hearing on House Schwent Memorial 28. You want to tell us a little bit about that,
the
Joint Memorial?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Joint Memorial 28 is a memorial to requesting that the President and Congress direct the United States Department of Agriculture and the Department of Interior to fulfill the promises of the Northwest Forest Plan and to increase the harvest of timber to support rural communities and economies.
And I see we have Representative Schaffer here in the room. Welcome and good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to you.
And I see you're the sponsor of this House Joint Memorial.
I am. Thank you. Proudly sponsor of this memorial. I'm also State Representative Mike Schaffler, House District 48. Patrick read the summary. I think that sums it up. I just wanted to say a couple things very briefly. This was passed, I believe, by a Senate that was Democrat-controlled and signed by a Democrat president. So I don't think this is really a partisan thing. All we're doing is asking that the president allow us, the current president, allow us to work within the existing plan, which would increase board feet production. And I also was talking to Mr. Geisinger in the back. If we had a 50-year rotation, we could actually expand it even further. But I'm not asking for that today. But it would really help for education, health care, public safety. We need the money, roads. It would, and jobs for folks out in these areas that need to go back to work. And all that flows right into Portland, because when they're doing better out in the country, it just goes right down the river, and we do better in town. And that's the way it has been ever since we've been here. You know, and last summer, Madam Chair, as you recall, we had a Ag and Natural Resources Interim Committee had a committee hearing in Bend, and then the next day we went on a tour with the logging folks. And at lunch, I'd met a bunch of people I'd never met. But at lunch, I was talking to a logger, and we did talk about, you know, production, but mostly we spent our time talking about new modern technology, new and improved forest practices and management, and the investment that woodland owners are putting into their own property is to protect salmon habitat, water quality, their own money on their own private land, many times in cooperation with the government. We talked about how these families send their kids off to places like Oregon State and other universities to learn even more about how to sustainably log in a not only economically sustainable but environmentally sustainable way. And we also talked about the benefit of employment and revenue for all the essential services that we like to all talk about as legislators. And that logger was Pat Heffernan, who is on the Forestry Board. I'm not an expert on this, and I don't claim to be. There's a bunch of folks back here that are. But it just makes sense that we do this. And I know there's some real good-hearted people that may be coming to oppose this, but you know, the plan, it already exists. I think it's reasonable. I think it can be done. And everybody that comes up here will have paper in their hand. We all use it, with no exceptions. We all use wood fiber products. That's not going to end. And I have learned by virtue of being a legislator, that and living in the great state of Oregon, this is the best place in the world to grow trees. I understand in Douglas County, for every board foot they grow up in Canada, we can grow 15 board feet in Douglas County. This is actually a good, wise environmental thing to do if you're thinking globally. This is where we should be logging. This is where we should be growing trees for the wood fiber industry. And I said this on the floor again, and I'm going to say it again too. To tell an Oregon woodland owner not to grow and harvest trees is like telling an Iowa farmer not to grow corn. For me, it's an absurd notion, and we can do it. We can do it safely. We can do it forever. And I just urge you all to take a good, hard, close look at this. Let's pass it on and just give a message to our federal government that we need to start using and taking advantage of the resources we have here in this state. So that's about all I have to say.
Thank you, Representative Shelton.
You're more than welcome.
You said it very well.
Okay.
You served on that same committee.
Yes, ma'am.
And it is just so vital to the Oregon economy.
Yep.
And to our schools and our seniors.
If anybody has any questions,
yeah,
Madam Chair, I'll try and answer them. If they're
okay.
Technical, I'll leave it to the experts, like Representative Burley there.
Representative Shelfler?
A brief comment, Mr. Shelfler. The folks out in my area, out in Molalla, Mount Angel, Silverton, we thank you very much for this resolution, and we agree with you 100%.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Sumner. I've spent a lot of time in the nice little town of Molalla, and there's a mill just south of town that's just growing weeds around it. And that's a sad sight indeed. Thank you for those words.
Thank you very much.
That's all. I'm going to go back to committee.
That'd be good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have a good morning.
We've signed up Jim Geisinger to testify. Would you like to come forward?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Jim Geisinger. I represent the Associated Oregon Loggers. We're a trade association comprised of about 1,060 contract loggers and other businesses associated with the logging industry. I'm here to express my strong support for House Joint Memorial 28, and I wanted to put a little historical perspective behind this resolution. And if I start telling you more than you want to know, Madam Chair, I trust that you'll call me on that and I can wrap up my comments. But prior to the implementation of the Northwest Forest Plan, the area that it covered was producing about 4.5 billion board feet per year in the states of Washington, Oregon, and California. And that was coming off less than half of the national forest lands. Contrary to popular belief, the national forests have never been tree farms, and even prior to this plan, less than half of the lands were actually allocated to timber production purposes. In 1990, the spotted owl was listed as a threatened species, and in 1992, the marbled murrelet was listed as a threatened species. There was a series of court challenges questioning the adequacy with which the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management were protecting habitat for those species, and there was a series of injunctions that led up to the Northwest Forest Conference. That conference was actually held 12 years ago this coming Sunday on April 3rd, 1992. It was called by President Clinton after he had met with a group of Carpenter Union members in Springfield, Oregon in 1992 when he was campaigning, and they asked him for his help in breaking the gridlock, the legal gridlock that had been created by these court challenges. And his reaction was to hold a forest conference and bring all the parties together to try to resolve the problem. And his goal that he stated at the hearing was to create a plan that balanced environmental values and economic values. What we got 4 months later was a plan that effectively set aside 88% of the federal forest lands in the area that the plan addressed. These lands were set aside for late successional reserves, riparian buffers. Any anadromous fish-bearing stream got 300-foot buffers placed on either side of it. Streams that had the resident fish had 200-foot buffers on either side. Streams that didn't even run water all year round got 150-foot buffers on either side. They had adaptive management areas and connective corridors. The remaining 12% of these lands were put in what was called matrix, where timber production was to be the principal use of these lands. What we found out, though, very quickly was out of the 4 million acres that were allocated to matrix, 1 million of it was non-productive and unsuitable forest land. So what we really got was 3% of the federal lands where modern forestry practices can be employed. From those lands, the Clinton administration said we would get 1.1 billion board feet per year. And as is accurately stated in House Joint Memorial 28, we haven't received one-third of that amount in the 12 years that this plan has been in place. The reason is very complex, but clearly one of the main reasons is that the funding has never materialized to produce that level of timber. So while the plan proposed about a 85% reduction in the timber supply we had, the The reality is it's been about a 95% reduction from what we had, and it's been less than a third of what we were promised. So this memorial, which would ask Congress and the administration to allocate adequate funds to reach that 1.1 billion board feet, would be very, very helpful in trying to achieve the promise that was made to us 12 years ago. My final comment is in 2000, when President Bush was elected, our industry had a very serious meeting to talk about what our strategy should be going forward. One option would be to destroy the Northwest Forest Plan and start over. And I think we had access to the administration to effect that alternative if that's what we had chosen to do. I think calmer heads prevailed, and what we decided to do is try to work with the administration to make sure that the Clinton-Gore plan worked. Well, what we have now is an environment where the environmental community is characterizing the Clinton-Gore plan as the timber industry's Christmas gift, and it was nothing of the kind. In fact, the environmental community got everything they wanted and more out of the Northwest Forest Plan, but as is so typical, no sooner was the ink dried than the goalposts were shifted. This is a very, very modest plan. We, as Representative Schaffler said, these lands can produce 10 times as much wood as it is proposed under this plan, but all we're asking for is the funding that will allow this plan to function, and with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Gansett. Any questions?
Thank you.
I think you did a very good job. We have Bill Cluding.
Madam Chair Smith, committee, for the record, I'm Bill J. Cluding. I represent the Western Council of Industrial Workers. We have over 4,000 members in Oregon. Not too many years ago, we had 20,000 plus. I appreciate Representative Schaffner sponsoring this bill, and you have a committee to hear this bill. Northwest Forest Plan adopted, or I might say promised, in 1994, was put together by a team that looked at the environmental and ecosystem management using public input, resulting in rural economic recovery, but it did not happen. It called for 1 billion board feet a year. This has not happened. Some years we grew less than 10% of what we was promised. This has closed hundreds of mills, cost Oregon thousands and thousands of jobs, causing rural areas to almost go away. As I speak, I have 116 members in Yakima, Washington, that have 20 more working days in a mill that has run for 100 and plus years. The cause? Lack of timber supply, and costing too much to bring lumber logs in from Canada. There is not one budget in this state that's not broke. The state budget, county, cities, schools, there is not one budget that's not broke. And we're still having to make cuts in people and services. What we can do here today is start the reverse of this downward spiral that we've been in for 20 plus years. You all heard a very famous person in one of his speeches years ago say, "I have a dream." If we could get what the Northwest Forest Plan promised, we could immediately put 1,000 people back to work in this state alone. We could build 4, 6, 8 small, high-tech mills in the rural areas. And you know how many jobs a timber job creates in these rural areas. 2-to-1, 3-to-1, the ratio's there. 1,000 high-paying timber jobs in this state in 2 years would create close to $5 million in state taxes alone, just the 1,000 people that's in the woods themselves, $5 million additional state taxes. This doesn't have to be a dream. This could become a reality. Today, you can start the process by passing House Joint Memorial 28. This could be the first step in turning Oregon's economy around so we can properly fund our schools, take care of our elderly, and you people for sure know all the other agencies are out there crying for help. Madam Chair, Committee, I urge you to endorse House Memorial 28. Thank you for this time, and I will try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kirby. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Irv Fletcher for Representative Fredwick. Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Smith, Chair Smith, members of the committee. I'm Irv Fletcher, Legislative Assistant for Representative Brad Whitt of District 31. I'll read this, submit this on his behalf.
Okay.
Chair Smith, members of the committee. Representative Whitt regrets he's unable to be here this morning. He is attending to the death of his father in Massachusetts. House Joint Memorial 28 discusses a topic dear to the heart of Representative Whitt. He was a natural resource economist for the Western Council of Industrial Workers for many years, his specialty being the economics of the timber industry in the Pacific Northwest. Although Representative Whitt had reservations with the annual timber harvest, by the way, being too low, authorized by the plan, 1 billion board feet, he supported the plan as originally submitted by the Clinton administration. The annual cut for the first 10 years of the plan has been much less than 1 billion board feet. A trip through Oregon's communities, which at one time had a sustainable timber economy, now is a litany of shuttered mills and shattered lives. Representative Whitt urges your support for House Joint Memorial 28. And I might add, brief remarks, I was privileged, I thought at the time, to be a member of the Clinton Timber Summit. I participated as one of the labor members. And so I also share his regret at the fact that that's never been carried out, it hasn't been close. And if you've ever been in rural Oregon, you can see the result of that. Clearly, shuttered mills and shattered lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fletcher. Any questions for Mr. Fletcher? And please offer our condolences to Representative Whitt.
Yes. Representative Whitt, we'll be back Monday.
Thank you.
And no questions. I certainly haven't heard anything I disagree with, but my name is Terry Beyer, not Lee.
Oh. I could blame that on the office personnel, but I'm part of those people now, so I will take personal responsibility for that man.
Okay.
It shows you that when I was here as a lobbyist, it was Lee Beyer.
Yeah, it was Lee Beyer.
Sorry to make that mistake, Terry.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. I have Lee Hazelwood, a senior advocate. Like to testify? Good morning.
Good morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lee Hazelwood. I'm a senior advocate and I'm here. I live in Staten, Oregon, and I'm here to support House Joint Memorial 28. I first visited Oregon in 1972, was immediately impressed with the state, not just with the beauty of Oregon, but the active commerce that was visible throughout the state. While lumber mills and timber-related companies were an active part of many communities, other parts of the state had huge agricultural areas dedicated to food and grain production. It was exhilarating to see these industries providing employment using renewable resources. Oregon was a vibrant economic contributor to our country. Shortly after moving permanently to Oregon in 1978, I said, as many others did, as special interest groups begin to tear apart the foundation of our state, environmental groups tied knots in the timber industry, employment regulations eliminated a large portion of young farm workers, and multi-layered lawsuits slowly drained away the marginal financial resources of those industries. In their wake, we were left with mostly log exports, chip production, and a few large agribusinesses. These losses were just not in the employment sector. They caused a significant reduction in tax money that these industries contributed to the state's economy. The continued reduction in timber monies helped start the long downward spiral that eventually put our schools, senior disabled programs, and emergency service providers in constant fiscal crisis. Alaska has oil, which produces a significant amount of revenue. Wyoming has coal and natural gas resources and has a large surplus in revenue. Nevada has the gaming industry producing large amounts of revenue. Oregon has one of the largest natural sustainable resources, and it's called timber. Using more of this renewable resource means jobs, J-O-B-S. More jobs mean more revenue for the state. This is the reason I am supporting House Joint Memorial 28, and thank you for your time. But not in my testimony, but as I live in state and remember what happened up the canyon when logging stopped. People left, homes were for sale. My son was in the construction business, and you couldn't hardly give away a home at that time. So I saw what happened to his business, and so thank you for your time and willing to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Hazelwood? No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ross,
Madam Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Ross Mickey, the Western Oregon manager of the American Forest Resource Council. We're a trade association that represents primary wood manufacturers in 11 western states. A large chunk of our membership is in Western Oregon. I've been involved in the timber industry for about 30 years, worked for the Forest Service for 10 years as a forester, before I came and worked for the timber industry in this association. The Northwest Forest Plan, we definitely support the fully funding of the Northwest Forest Plan and meeting all of the outputs that are associated with it. As a reminder, the Northwest Forest Plan is not a timber plan at all. It was a plan developed by, as people have said, the Clinton-Gore administration. It was an ecosystem restoration plan and a plan to protect wildlife. As been stated before, 21 million out of the 24 million acres that are encompassed by the Northwest Forest Plan are being managed for something other than any type of timber production. So we have 3 million acres that are in matrix that are actually form the backbone of that 1.1 billion board feet that was promised under the plan. In those 3 million acres, though, the practices are radically different than what existed prior to this plan. There is no more clear cutting. Per se. Every acre of land out there has between 25 and 45 standing trees left for wildlife purposes. Down wood is left on the forest floor. Large buffers are put around all streams, as said. Even streams that don't flow all year round have 150-foot buffers on them. 300-foot, 350-foot buffers on fish-bearing streams. So this plan is not a timber plan at all. It's a plan to manage the land in a very light touch, so to sustain all the things that the plan is supposed to sustain, and that is clean water, clean air, wildlife, you know, abundant wildlife. One of the biggest problems we have on our national forest right now has to do with lack of management and the increased danger of catastrophic wildfire due to these stands getting overstocked and becoming prime places for insects, disease, and again, wildfire. The Biscuit Fire is a prime example of that. We lost hundreds of thousands of acres of prime wildlife habitat. The streams are now full of sediment having to do with no vegetation on it, not because of logging, right? All of these environmental things, this environmental damage could have been lessened, you know, and taken away perhaps if we were in there doing the type of management that needs to be done, which is thinning these forests, you know, getting them down to a stocking level that's actually healthy and is and one that's within the historic range, because right now these forests are way out of whack. So we're really in this, in the Northwest Forest Plan, all that they are really wanting to manage is 3 million out of those 24 million acres, which to me is way less than what should be done in terms of getting at the heart of the problem in terms of the catastrophic wildfire, the insects and disease. We have hundreds of thousands of acres of second growth timber out there, plantations and other things that are getting very, very thick and dense that will never reach those kind of characteristics that will support, as people say, old growth habitat. They're just too thick. They'll never get there. So, you know, we definitely support this joint memorial. We believe that the fully funding of the Northwest Forest Plan is funding things not just for timber, because in Region 6, timber production aspect of the budget is less than 10% of the Forest Service's budget. The rest of the budget is going in there to maintain roads, to do campgrounds, you know, get those restoration work that needs to be done out there to keep our waters clean, you know, to keep our wildlife healthy and keep our forests sustained so we don't lose them with these massive wildfires. So this is, as people have said, is a very, very modest part of that in terms of just addressing the 3 million acres that are out there in terms of the timber part. So we definitely support this, and we urge you to send this message to the President and to the Congress so that they can increase the funding to actually do what they promised to do. And for Region 6 of the Forest Service, that would be about $100 million in increase, in about $100 million to bring it up to the point where right now they're only funding about 40% of what they promised. That additional $100 million would increase that, you know, to get the full share of Region 6. And as you know, that money isn't just money going in and it's lost. It's money that's going to return revenues back to the U.S. Treasury. You know, so it's really not a loss or a outflow of our taxpayers' money. And as other people have said, you've got the ripple effect of jobs being created and that kind of thing. But really, the point of the Northwest Forest Plan was an ecological restoration program, not a timber program. And so I think in terms of supporting this from every aspect, I can't see what any downside of it at all. And I thank you very much. And
thank you.
I'll ask any
questions. Nope. Thank you very much. I have Tom Parton from the Oregon Forest Industries. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, and thank you for allowing us to testify. My name is Tom Parton, and I'm president of the American Forest Resource Council. I'm headquartered in Portland, Oregon, and Ross Mickey, as he mentioned, is our Western Oregon field manager, and Ross has been following this issue since its beginning back in the 1990s, and I think most eloquently presented the facts on it. And I wanted to give you a little insight on behalf of AFRC, the area we cover, and some of my perspectives on this. Our mission at AFRC is to promote balanced and sustained management on our federal forests. And as you know, the Northwest Forest Plan impacts the forests not just of Oregon, but also all of Western Washington and clear down into Northwest California. And our membership covers that area. And I've seen firsthand what the lack of management on our forests, all the way from Happy Camp, California, up to Aberdeen and Everett, Washington, has meant for our industry and meant for our communities and meant for our people. And it's been hard. It's been hard felt, and those communities and those people haven't rebounded. I've also seen what it's done to the forests over those acres. As was previously mentioned, we've got 24 million acres of the most productive forests in the Pacific Northwest tied up under this. We've got maybe management occurring on 3 million acres, but we've been woefully short of those 3 million acres. It just hasn't been happening. At the same time we've got this land tied up, this region is producing 12 billion board feet of fiber per year growing out there. Year in, year out. Year in, year out. It produces this. We have been losing 2 billion of that to mortality, whether it be fires, whether it be insects, whether it be wind throw. And we've been harvesting less than half a billion. in this Northwest Forest Plan. We've got a tremendous amount of ingrowth coming in. We've got a tremendous hazard building up. If we don't start addressing it, we're going to lose it. We've got a forest out there that needs tending. We've got communities and jobs that need to happen. And we've got an economy that's demanding wood for our products that we aren't giving it. We're taking 38% of our wood that we need domestically, and we're importing it. And we're importing it from countries like Canada that aren't growing it sustainably, and we're importing it from countries that don't have rules and regulations. So I'm asking you today to support action on the Northwest Forest Plan. This 1.1 billion board feet is a small amount of what could be produced. It's a step in the right direction. We've worked very hard for its implementation, but efforts like you're putting forth right now to move it forward is greatly needed. So, again, we endorse House Joint Memorial 28. Thanks for your help and effort on it, and we certainly look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Mr. Martin, any questions? Seeing none. One other person, Jay Ward. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Smith, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. My name is Jay Ward. I have the privilege of serving as the Conservation Director of Oregon Natural Resources Council, a statewide nonprofit organization dedicated to keeping Oregon a special place to live, work, and raise a family. On behalf of ONRC's 6,000 members and our staff, I'd like to commend the committee and Representative Schaffler for your interest in improving the economic opportunities available to rural Oregonians affected by our challenging business climate. Regrettably, I'm not, however, able to endorse House Joint Memorial 28, as I believe it represents an inaccurate assessment of the causes, goals, and results of the Northwest Forest Plan. In contrast to some of the testimony you've heard today, the Northwest Forest Plan was a compromise, and it was really a deal made to get out from under some court injunctions that Judge Dwyer put forward. It was the development team came up with 8 options, none of which produced enough timber for industry, and so the administration sent them back to the drawing board to come up with what was known then as Option 9. That had a projection, not a promise, of 1.1 billion board feet. If the intent of this memorial is to spur congressional action to reinvigorate rural economies, it unfortunately ignores substantial economic evidence to do so. According to a report by the Sonoran Institute, Prosperity in the 21st Century West, and I'll be glad to give you a copy if you'd like it, the best way to improve economic growth in rural communities is to protect, not to exploit, the natural resources. In fact, the slowest growth occurs in counties with public lands that are unprotected and not adjacent to protected areas. In Oregon, the most economically vibrant counties, such as Deschutes County, Representative Burley represents, are vibrant because of the nearby protected lands, such as the Three Sisters Wilderness Area, that offer unique opportunities for outdoor recreation, awe-inspiring scenery, and an unparalleled quality of life. Perhaps that's why companies like Nike, Columbia Sportswear, Adidas, and Roughwear in Bend wrote to Undersecretary of Agriculture Ray last year asking him to ensure that the last roadless wildlands were protected for their customers. But House Joint Memorial 28 is flawed in substance as well as intent, as when it asserts on line 9 that 20 of the 24 million acres of the Northwest Forest Plan forests are protected from timber management. It might surprise you to know that in the last 2 years, the Forest Service has significantly reduced those protections. And the agency did so by first amending the plan to weaken the aquatic conservation strategy, removing protections from forests surrounding salmon-bearing streams, and secondly, by removing the survey and manage requirements. These requirements were designed to head off future listings and to identify and monitor the presence of and vigor of almost 1,000 old-growth dependent species. Finally, the agency is even now logging the areas designated as late succession reserves. Those 20 million acres that you've heard being referred to as protected are today being logged in the Siskiyou National Forest. That's been the subject of some controversy. House Joint Memorial 28 also misinterprets the Northwest Forest Plan estimate of 1.1 billion board feet as a promise. It is not and never was a promise. It was a political compromise the Clinton administration was willing to back in order to insulate the agencies from judicial actions. However, there were promises made by that plan. The Northwest Forest Plan promised that, to the best of our government's ability, the American people's wildlife resources would be conserved, that marbled murrelets, spotted owls, and Chinook salmon would survive for future generations.
generations to use and enjoy. As the timber industry discovered last year when it challenged the Owls listing, that promise is not being met. The memorial also claims that the Northwest Forest Plan intended to reduce fuels and to minimize threats from forest fires. Forest fires are a foundational component of most Northwest forests, but vary in intensity, size, and scale depending on the forest type. To the extent that such threats exist beyond their natural range of variability, they exist mainly on those forests east of the Cascades and to some extent in southwestern Oregon, most of which are not covered by the Northwest Forest Plan. However, as the summer of 2002 demonstrated, such fires can occur when weather conditions, forest type, and fuel load conditions are ripe. Unfortunately, 100 years of misguided forest management has reduced the diversity and resiliency of our forest. And I sent y'all a copy. This is it's from 1923 outside of Yahats, Oregon. And this is would probably today be described as an overstock stand. But we have reduced the structure and complexity on our forest to such an extent that we no longer have forests like this. I would imagine it would take a couple hours of an oxyacetylene torch to get a fire started in this type of stand. Unfortunately, the young firs, which forest management has substituted, are significantly less resilient than those trees, which ironically is where some of the opportunity for common ground may exist. As Mr. Parton pointed out, there are millions of acres of previously logged, densely replanted, single-species plantations in the national forests covered by the plan. If the Forest Service were to focus their efforts in those areas, as they've done in the Sayulsa National Forest, then real forest restoration could begin to be accomplished, complexity and structure returned to simplified stands, and jobs would be created, and we would support that. In fact, I believe Congressman DeFazio introduced legislation to do just that in the last Congress, and if I'm not mistaken, your colleague, Representative Holvey, has authored House Joint Memorial 30 to support that bill. I believe that memorial would be a better use of this committee's time. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Warren. Any questions for Mr. Warren?
Representative, was the Oregon Natural Resources Council one of the original participants in the Northwest Timber Fight?
Chair Smith, Representative Brokwitz, yes, we were.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else here who wants to testify on the South Joint Memorial 28? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 28. And we'll open a work session on House Joint Memorial 28. Committee, I guess we'll leave it up. Do we need a motion?
I'd be delighted to, Madam.
Okay.
I move that House Joint Memorial 28 be moved to the floor to be adopted.
I have a motion to move House Joint Memorial 28 to the floor and be adopted for the recommendation. Do pass recommendation.
Do pass recommendation.
Any comments?
Sure.
Representative Burley.
Yes. Most all the speakers said earlier, this is a very important part of our state's economy, and I've seen, since the time I've lived over in eastern Oregon, I've seen mills close in the following towns. Now, these are all just in eastern Oregon, but what's important here is that the Northwest Forest Plan, everybody tends to think it's just a west side issue, but its implications go way beyond that when you look at the wood basket. So in eastern Oregon alone, in about the past 12 years or so, mills have shut down and are now gone from Joseph, Baker City, Paisley, Lakeview, Klamath Falls, Bend, Prineville, Maupin, Ty Valley, Burns, John Day's lost one at least, and Heppner. And I'm sure I've probably missed some in here somewhere now. You know, some of them, for instance, Lakeview still has a mill running, but between Paisley and Lakeview, they had three running at one time. And I think Maupin and Ty Valley had three or four running late 80s, early 90s. But this constant ramping down on this whole situation has led to all of these cities and towns and rural communities losing these jobs. And as the gentleman, Mr. Hazelwood, said, if people aren't working, we don't have revenue, we can't fund the programs that are important to this state. So I fully support House Joint Memorial 28 and urge all of us to support it.
Thank you. Any other comments? I guess I'd like to say, I guess I don't understand what the difference is between a political compromise and a promise. We were promised so many million board feet, and whether that's a political compromise in this day and age, we do a lot of that down here. And I'm sure we're well aware of that. So I too have seen the devastation done to our forest industries, and I don't think we manage our forests. I'm fully supporting this joint memorial. So, any other comments? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Gokas?
Yes.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Hass?
Aye.
Representative
Roblin?
Aye.
Representative
Sumner?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Receiving unanimous passage, House Joint Memorial 28 is sent to the floor, and Representative Shoffer will be the carrier. Thank you very much. Okay. Evidently, you've been unscathed. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2656. And Patrick, do you want to give us an update on that? And then we'll call people up to talk about some amendments.
Yes, I'd be glad to, Madam Chair. House Bill 2656, which we heard previously on March 21st, makes mandatory the Oregon Beef Council assessment on cattle and sets a minimum assessment at 50 cents per head and increases the maximum permissible to $1 per head. We received some testimony previously and discussed some changes to the bill, and I believe Glenn Stormbring and Dave Nelson are here, and we also in your packet have included dash 1, dash 2, and dash 3 amendments to the bill. Our witnesses will speak.
Thank you, Patrick. So we have dash 1, dash 2, and dash 3?
Yep.
Okay, and I think we're going to have some people give us an idea.
Did you get dash 2? Did you find dash 2?
Are you missing dash 2?
I think we're having a few things up here we need to get on the committee. Get straightened.
Madam Chair, I have that in the handout.
Okay. Thank you. Why don't you go ahead?
For the record, Glenn Sunbrink with the Oregon Cattlemen Association. I'll try to be as brief as possible and not go over a lot of old ground unless you have questions. We did discuss the dash one at the last meeting, and that is hand engrossed for you to kind of help you out with seeing where these different amendments are. We discussed the dash two amendment adds the word creditable in front of the word institution on lines 11 and 19. And the purpose is to give guidance to the Oregon Beef Council, because that's the organization that will be dealing with these funds, on the type of institution to be sought in the event that Oregon State University is unavailable to conduct the necessary research. The intended definition for the word creditable, we want, and for the record, is that it would be that of Webster Dictionary, and I'd like to just read it in, that the type of institution would be that would be selected by the Beef Council would be worthy of belief, significantly good to bring esteem or praise, worthy of commercial credit. And then also what we're talking about, to be clear, of the word depth of institution, also from Webster, a significant practice, relationship, or organization in a society or a culture, something or someone firmly associated with a place or thing, an established organization or corporation, and we would intend that that could be a university of or a college, but not necessarily limited to those. One further amendment that we have, the dash 3 amendment, after discussing this with the administrator of the Oregon Beef Council, Nicole Bechtel, she had a question about, because these are to be new monies. As you recall, currently there is 50 cents that goes into existing programs. We're asking for an additional 50 cents to be assessed on our own producers that would be specifically targeted for things that are in this bill. And she had some concerns about the bookkeeping of this. So we change in the dash 3 amendments, clarify how the new funds will be spent, including the administrative cost for carrying out these new programs. And the reason that's important, as long as the federal government has a law that deals with the first 50 cents and existing programs, those funds have to be specifically spent for certain things and can't be spent for others. These new funds can be, and that's what's spelled out in this bill. And so to cover the administrative costs and we don't get commingling of these funds, that's why we've made the dash three amendments.
Now that we're all thoroughly confused.
I tried to make it as simple as I could, Madam Chair, and but I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Dave, did you...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Nelson of the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. We support the dash 1, 2, and 3 amendments be included. However, I must regretfully tell you that there is one amendment that did not get done, and that was... Let me call your attention to page 1 on lines 12, 13, and 14. This arises out of legal action against federal marketing boards that came out of the state of California that the legislature dealt with in Senate Bill 854 in the 2003 session. Two lawsuits, a tree fruit operation named Wildman filed suit against the director of the Department of Agriculture, Glickman, and the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court in 1997. The suit challenged the authority of the USDA to collect mandatory assessments for commodity commissions to use for generic promotional programs, saying that that was a violation of Wildman's protections against forced speech under the First Amendment of the Constitution. The Supreme Court ruled in 1997 that mandatory assessments collected by commodity commissions were not violations of free speech protections, and so another suit followed that, United Foods versus the USDA, and was decided in 2001, whereby the Supreme Court reversed itself and held that collections of mandatory assessments from United Foods in fact did violate United Foods protections under forced speech under the First Amendment of the Constitution. There's a third suit that is now before the U.S. Supreme Court relating to the National Beef Checkoff, whereby the National Beef Checkoff was ruled unconstitutional in I think it was Minnesota or Michigan, somewhere in the upper Midwest. That suit was argued before the U.S. Supreme Court in mid-December. The U.S. Supreme Court will probably issue its opinion the end of April, and you have a bill here to deal with anything that comes out of that that's sitting on the shelf. The Senate bill, or House Bill 2656, we originally received advice from the Attorney General's office here in Oregon that these funds, the additional 50 cents and the research that was spawned under that 50 cents, should not be subjected to Department of Agriculture oversight that was created in Senate Bill 854 in the 2003 session. The oversight was created to deal with the free speech issue, creating the concept or expanding the concept or clarifying the concept, I suppose is the proper term, of commodity commission operations, that they be protected speech under the theory of government speech, whereby governments can use tax monies to speak without violating citizens' protections against that speech being considered to be protected free speech. So commodity commissions were moved slightly further under the umbrella of the Oregon Department of Agriculture in 2003. The provisions in lines 12, 13, and 14 say that the protections, these 50 cents are not subject to the oversight created by Senate Bill 854. That was original advice from the Department of Justice. Now the Department of Justice has reversed itself and sent a message saying that those research projects should be subjected to the same oversight that was created in Senate Bill 854 in 2003. So the amendment would simply say on line 13, we believe, how legislative counsel would construct that, would simply delete the "not" on line 13, thereby leaving the research project subject to that oversight.
Thank you. Can we make a note to that and move that down to...
I'm not sure that you can make a note. You should ask legislative counsel. The other option, if you cannot do that, would be to pass the bill. We would assure you that we will make that correction on the Senate side, send it back for concurrence on the floor of the House.
So either way procedurally works in the flow of business.
I'm sorry?
Can we fix an error, Madam Chair?
Well, then we'll have to bring the bill back, and it still has to go to the Ways and Means, and I'm afraid we're running out of time. Can we fix it in Ways and Means? That's what I'm thinking. We could fix it in Ways and Means.
My guesstimate would be that Legislative Council would require another printed amendment, which would require you to bring it back and to adopt it. But Patrick could certainly make that inquiry.
Well, just for clarification, you had suggested the amendment could be made on the Senate side.
The amendment could easily be made on the Senate side. There is no opposition to the amendment, and so it should be just a procedural amendment that would then come back for concurrence, and the chair would sign off and carry the concurrence on the floor.
For the sake of time, that might be the better way to go. Mark, Representative Hass?
Does this a referral to Ways and Means?
Yes.
I would not have a problem with that personally, and I just wanted to say that I did raise some questions that I think resulted in the -2 amendments, and I appreciate that, I really do. It's not exactly, it still is a little funky to me, but I don't want perfect to get in the way of good, so I do appreciate you addressing those concerns.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that's maybe what we'll do you think we could fix it on the Senate side, not in Ways and Means?
Well, I think if the Ways and Means Committee deemed it appropriate to do that down there, they could certainly do that. And these gentlemen will be working on this bill.
But that's not what he's saying. He's saying because it has to come back to the Policy Committee. Because otherwise we could fix it.
It would still have to come back to this committee for concurrence.
It depends on how we... If the committee were to send a note to Ways and Means saying that we intended to do this, it would probably satisfy that notion of abuse of Ways and Means for getting into policy issues as opposed to budgetary issues.
Right.
In that case, the best way to do it would probably be, if the committee wants to take action today, the best way to do it probably would be for the amendment to be made on the Senate side and then bring it back for concurrence.
How does the committee, does anybody have any comments on that?
Well, Madam Chair, it looks to me like we're going to see this several times more no matter what we do.
Well, we apologize for that having fallen through the slats.
Really?
Well, it seemed to me whether or not the word knots in there is going to have some effect on Ways and Means.
That's correct.
So where we're headed towards here is we send a note to Ways and Means that when they evaluate this, the word not should be taken out.
Right.
And we'll fix it on the Senate side.
Right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I could, just one quick comment. And I don't know if Roger Huffman came into the room or not, but from the Department of Agriculture, and it's his responsibility to collect these fees.
Mm-hmm.
This has no cost whatsoever on the state. In fact, it actually makes money for the state, a slight amount, not a lot, but a little bit. And so I don't know if it's no big rush on this, but if it's really necessary to go to Ways and Means when there is, I thought, in fact, that he had sent a note, a fiscal statement or something to that effect to the committee that there would be no cost.
Madam Chair, one last thought, if not thinking about the subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and if, as Patrick described at the hearing, that all fee increases are subject to Ways and Means review, that it may be better for the committee to just take another day or two and get that amendment, send it down there perfect where they could bounce it back out to the floor and it would then go back, be signed off by the chair and go to the Senate floor without going to a Senate substantive committee.
Yeah, I think that's probably the wisest course of action. Representative Hass?
Thanks. I'm fine either way, but I just wanted to note that Representative Bokus and I both saw the effectiveness of attaching notes to bills.
Yeah.
The fire bill went to the Revenue Committee, and there was no note that we had all asked for. Nobody knew what we were talking about. They looked at us like we lost our mind.
And how long do you
said,
think?
No, we had a note, really. We promised we did.
And it got a lot, I'm sure. How long do you think it would take to get the amendment?
I would suspect that it's a one-word amendment. I don't know legislative council is. They could probably have it by Wednesday latest.
Could we set this for Wednesday and just come back to work session and hold it?
If I could make a suggestion also, if the committee desires to do that, we could have a set of dash four amendments drafted that would encompass that change as well as the dash ones, dash twos, and dash threes, because that way that would save time in processing also.
That would be a cleaner bill. So
wonderful.
Why don't we do that?
Let's do that.
May I ask then, Patrick, are you going to do that, including the taking out the word not?
I'll double check with Mr. Nelson on that to confirm that.
And we'll set it for Wednesday. Next Wednesday.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for being patient with us.
Hey, that's what we do here. Thank you. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2656 again. We're going to open the work session on House Bill 2581. And Patrick, do you want to describe what that bill did?
Yes, Madam Chair. House Bill 2581, as members will recall, we heard on March 9th and March 16th, it's the bill that declares vermiculture to be an agricultural activity and makes vermiculture products subject to regulation as agricultural commodities. This bill, when we received the fiscal analysis for it, we had received a fiscal analysis on the 16th that indicated it was going to have a cost above $100,000. And at that meeting, we heard testimony from the Department of Agriculture indicating that they did not believe it was going to impact their department in that way, because the Department of Environmental Quality performs the inspections that would be required under the bill. Upon further review, legislative fiscal offices had discussions with DEQ and with ODA. Both now indicate that the bill will not have a significant fiscal impact on either department, as is reflected in the revised fiscal impact statement, which is in your packets beneath the staff measure summary for House Bill 2581. So the bill, as with the fiscal impact we have in hand, has no significant fiscal impact. The SMS says may have revenue impact, but that is not correct. It has no revenue impact either, so there's no longer a fiscal revenue impact to the measure.
Thank you. I'll take a motion to move this to the floor.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt House Bill 2581.
Be adopted.
Be placed on the consent calendar, Madam Chair.
I think it would be very difficult to place this on the consent calendar, because I think we need to explain what this is.
Either way, it's fine with me.
Is it?
I don't mind. I do not mind carrying it. She's already talked to me.
I've talked to Representative Roblin about carrying it.
As chair, therefore, I move to the floor.
Thank you, Representative
Roblin. With the due pass recommendation.
I have House Bill 25. I have a motion to move House Bill 2581 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Do I have any comments? Any objections? So ordered. We'll have Representative Roblin carry the bill. House Bill 2581 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I'll close work session on House Bill 2581. Finally. Okay. We have work session on House Bill 2159. And Patrick, do you want to remind us what this bill did?
Yes, Madam Chair. House Bill 2159, which we heard previously on February 16th, directs that the net proceeds from the sale of the Department of Fish and Wildlife's headquarters in Portland, above those necessary to pay for or repay the costs incurred for the relocation of their headquarters, shall be credited to the State Wildlife Fund rather than reverting to the General Fund. This measure has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. And I believe any questions that the committee may have, we have the department here.
Okay. Does the committee have any questions? I think we have Roy Ellicker here. Can you answer any questions on this bill? No? Seeing none?
I'm looking at representing.
Questions or comments? We don't have a motion yet.
We don't have a motion. He's doing my job for me. I thought I'll just give him a name. Representative Robles, would you like to make a motion?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2159-4 with a due pass recommendation and bill referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you very much. I have a motion to move House Bill 2159 to the floor, although it has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. That was part of it. I know. I have everyone doing my job. Do I have any comments? Representative Burley.
Yes. when we had the first hearing on this bill, Madam Chair, I was thinking, I mean, it's very important that we protect the integrity of the assent language that this state has adopted under the Pittman-Robertson Act because of the fact that it brings us a great deal of federal dollars to help with our wildlife management programs. But one of the things that I was curious was, and I sent a letter to Ledge Council asking the question that if we were to take this money and instead of put it into the wildlife program per se, could we use it to establish and fund a compensation fund to be used as part of the Wolf Conservation Plan? And the answer that I, and by doing so, the question I had to Ledge Council was whether or not doing that would still comply with the assent language under Pittman-Robertson. And the answer that I got back from Ledge Council was that they believe that this would not meet the intent of the Pittman-Robertson. They said that it would actually, in their opinion, would lead to Oregon's ineligibility for federal funds under Pittman-Robertson. So, as much as I thought that was a good idea, and I mean, we could still perhaps pursue it and fight it out in courts, I guess the only other thing I would suggest at this time is that these monies, and I don't know if we can do this or not, but, you know, we do have a conservation plan, though some people still are not comfortable with it. It's my opinion that without the plan and without the plan being funded, we're going to have a very difficult time getting the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to support us and hopefully give us an incidental take statement that I believe the landowners need. So I mean, here's some money. It's money that needs to be used for management. The conservation plan is a management plan, and somehow I'd like to see if we can't make sure that this money is used to help implement the Wolf Conservation Plan.
I think by putting it on the record, we can and have, they can have that discussion down on Ways and Means is what they were going to talk about with the federal funds is why they need this bill down there. So, Representative Bokas?
Madam Chair, even though I'm the nominator of the motion, so on and so forth, I mean, I express the same. I guess the word is reservation, but consent that Representative Burley has raised. I mean, we're struggling with options to try to tie things together, and we see the legal opinion from the legal counsel we have to follow, eliminating some of the options that we have in front of us. And this is an issue that's not going to go away. It's not going to disappear. I mean, we sent it down to what it means. We still don't have the legislative action taken in the Wolf Plan and compensation and so on and so forth. And this is, of course, one of the avenues that we were exploring as an option for it. So but despite the fact that we'll vote for it and it'll carry forward, we've just eliminated another option that we thought we had that we don't have. And we committee as a whole is going to have to resolve the other issues that are connected with this before we adjourn, or else we're going to leave the cattlemen, the sheep, right, landowners, and even the residents, people like John Day, as we heard in another committee, is at risk. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for stating that. Representative Roblin?
My concern, and I know it is everybody in the committee, that we not put ourselves at risk of losing the federal funds, and so we need to do the right thing. My hope is that in Ways and Means they will look at this. If it has to be spent in a certain way, it still can be. Maybe that money that was going to be used for that purpose could be set over to the other. So that whole discussion of making sure as we go through this process that money is used in appropriate ways to access other funds to do the same thing, I think, is important. So I would concur with your guys' issues on this one.
I think those are all very valid comments. Hopefully we will have bills to deal with a compensation plan and funds available to do that before we adjourn. And any other further comments? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Bokas?
Yes.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Hess?
Aye.
Representative Roman?
Aye.
Representative Sumner?
Aye.
Chair Smith?
Chair votes aye. Having received the required votes unanimously, we're going to move House Bill 2159 to the Ways and Means Committee for the due pass recommendation. Thank you. The panel closed the work session on House Bill 2159. And I think we're done with our agenda for the day. We are adjourned.